At this time of year, some of us will be making Christmas lists. The presents we'd like to get for Christmas. Perhaps we're too old for it. I expect the keenest present list makers are in the hall at the moment. But we'll be making other kinds of lists as well. Lists of food we need to buy. Lists of things we need to do to make the Christmas season run smoothly. And if we're going away, things we need to do and pack before we go. I'm a big list maker, some of you may know that, and I have lists for everything. So if you should happen to come round to my house, you'll find shopping lists, to-do lists, lists of presents I'm getting for other people, Christmas card lists, lists of things to pack before going away, lists of things to do before going away, and yes, I have made a list of Christmas presents I would like to get as well. We're in Advent right now. It's a Christian period of waiting and getting ready. Preparation for the coming of Jesus at Christmas. It's a great time to be making lists. I'm taking this opportunity to suggest that there might be a few extra things we might like to give or do for ourselves for Christmas, or just for any occasion. Another list, not a chore, hopefully a nice list. So what would the purpose of our alternative spiritual Christmas list be? On a spiritual Christmas list would be those things we can do as a commitment to valuing ourselves and our well-being and happiness, which will have a positive effect on us, on our lives, those around us, and the wider world. So there's sometimes called spiritual practices, or you could call them life practices. I'd like to credit Andy Pakula, the minister at New Unity, and his Five Seeds of Wholeness program for inspiring me. The five qualities to focus on are compassion, gratitude, generosity, mindfulness, and connection. They are five, but they're really one. So we're mindful of the riches we enjoy, and our gratitude for them leads us into generosity. We're mindful of those around us and the suffering we have in common, and we feel connected to them, and so we cannot but be compassionate. And the claim is that by being mindful, compassionate, grateful, generous and connected, we'll increase our own personal happiness and have a positive effect on those around us. So if it's that easy, let's do it all now. Let's all do it now, in fact, and do it all. And some of you will already be working your way little bit by little bit. It's an ongoing journey. Like everything worthwhile in life, there's no shortcut, sorry. If you play a musical instrument, you'll know from experience that if you don't practice, your skills get rusty. It's the same with lots of skills, computer skills, language skills. You can't play the piano once a year and then expect to sit down and play a concerto. It's the same with spiritual or life practices. They have to be practiced regularly. That's why they're called practices. And if they feel really new, then they'll have to be sort of learned first and then practiced. So I'll take them one at a time and start with mindfulness. Oh. My first candle for mindfulness. The obvious practice that cultivates mindfulness is meditation, where you sit regularly, focusing on the breath or other sensations and the thoughts coming and going. But it doesn't have to be meditation. Mindfulness is just noticing what's going on in the present moment. You can try eating mindfully, focusing on the taste, texture, or even the sound of eating. Any everyday activity can be done mindfully, and you can have little mindful moments throughout the day when you notice sensations, emotions, thoughts, events, as they happen. The frost on the leaf, the feel of a hug, the dust dancing in the sunlight. I had hoped it was going to be a sunny day. But these can all be mindful moments. The next one, I think I may have mentioned it already, is gratitude. Gratitude is one that's so easy, and yet we have a tendency to take things for granted, just forgetting to be grateful. That's what happens if we don't regularly bring to mind how fortunate we are. We can do this by making a list of the things we're grateful for every day or every week, have a moment of gratitude before or after eating, or if we pray, we can include gratitude in our prayers. My next one is compassion. Compassion can be cultivated with loving kindness or metta meditation, being with and listening to the people in our lives, being tuned in to the suffering of others, thinking of people in our prayers. And connection is related to compassion. To feel more connected, look at strangers and imagine their inner lives. Help a stranger. Or when eating, contemplate the network of beings it took for your meal to be as it is. Joseph Goldstein suggests, as an experiment, the next time you're doing an errand, stuck in traffic or standing in line at the supermarket, instead of being preoccupied with where you're going or what needs to be done, take a moment to simply send loving wishes to all those around you. Often, there is an immediate and very remarkable shift as we feel more connected and more present. And my last candle to light is for generosity. Which can be very difficult in today's society. We tend to think too much about it and tie ourselves up in knots. We can learn from the Buddha, but some of his ideas feel so alien to our thinking. And to truly embrace generosity, we need to practice a lot. I'm speaking personally here. I'm sure you're all lovely, generous people. I love the idea that we gain more from our own generosity than those to whom we give. As the Buddha said, if beings knew, as I knew, the fruit of sharing gifts, they would not enjoy their use without sharing them. Nor would the taint of stinginess obsess the heart and stay there, even if it were their last bit, their last morsel of food, they would not enjoy its use without sharing it, if there were anyone to receive it. Indeed, the tradition is that Buddhist teachers charge nothing for their teachings, and rely on dana, giving, alone to support them. But our Western minds can't stop thinking, but what if he spends it on drugs? If I give this much, I won't have enough for me and my family. Why should I give when so many don't? This situation can't be solved with my donation. The government needs to sort it out. How can I give to this cause and not that cause when they're all deserving? These thoughts can paralyse us and block our generosity. So to turn it round and think about generosity as a spiritual practice helps to get through some of that. And as a spiritual practice, like the others, it needs to be practised. And of course, I'm not just talking about money here. Generosity can be about time, attention. It's not just about money. Lauren Tyler Wright's story illustrates this. In grade school, I had a box of 64 Crayola crayons. It drove me crazy when kids would borrow them because, inevitably, they would blunt the sharp point of the crayon, put them back in the wrong colour order, or, heaven forbid, break one. Truth be told, it took me at least a month after I got the box to actually use one of the crayons because I wanted to keep them perfect for as long as possible. That's how much I valued the little bit of control I had over those 64 uniquely coloured objects. They were mine. When eventually I came around to the idea that my crayon box was not really mine in the first place, but was rather on loan to me for a while, I discovered a surprising sense of freedom, of relief almost. I was freed from fretting over the inevitable demise of each perfectly sharpened crayon tip. I still had a momentary anxiety attack when I heard snap and saw a classmate with a piece of crayon in either hand. But I released the worry in my heart about messing them up and was freed simply to enjoy what had been loaned to me and to share it with others. When you are able to see every component of your life, your money, your home, your car, your bank account in this way, you find that you worry less and that giving generously is no longer threatening or a chore. Instead, it becomes a life-enriching experience that underscores the abundance of what you do have. The secret is learning to hold your possessions more loosely. It's a strange paradox, but it's true. When you loosen your grip of control on your stuff, you find that you actually appreciate it more than you did when you clutched onto it for dear life. You also discover a freedom with and from your possessions that leads to joy in the act of giving. When practiced consistently and intentionally, giving can become a spiritual discipline and, even more, a sacred art. When we practice giving regularly and understand that our motivation has some connection outside of ourselves, we have the opportunity to radically transform our lives, the life of another person, even the lives of entire communities. It's about creating an entire lifestyle of generosity, says Lauren Taylor Wright. Rabbi David Cooper makes this suggestion from his book, God is a Verb. Every morning, put a small bill or coin in a place where you can reach it quickly. Give it away to the first needy person you meet, without stopping to evaluate how it will be used. This simple practice cultivates the habit of giving without thinking about what you might get back. It reminds you that everything you have is a gift from God to be freely shared. I'm not saying don't think. I'm just saying don't let thinking get in the way of giving. When we realise how rich we are in money, health, time, the natural world, people around us, education, and that none of this truly belongs to us, then our generosity can start to be released, practiced, nurtured. So the five qualities appear to have two sides, the feeling, the internal side, and the action. But they are really two sides of the same coin. You can start wherever works for you. Personal spirituality practices, such as loving-kindness meditation, cultivates compassion. As Meister Eckhart said, when what we plant in the soil of contemplation, we shall reap in the harvest of action. But you can also cultivate compassion through actions. Next time you're in a group of people and there's a person who's irritating you, or a person you know you find irritating or you really can't stand at all, notice how you're acting. You'll probably find that your body is turning away from them. It's almost like the opposite of magnetism. If you can turn your body towards that person and listen to what they're saying, that action is in itself cultivating compassion. There's a story about some Westerners who had travelled to a Buddhist monastery in India or Sri Lanka, and they were asking the abbot questions about compassion. They asked, "But what if I don't feel compassionate?" And the abbot replied, slightly exasperated, "You don't need to feel compassionate, just be compassionate." The key is practice, however you do it. If you have these five things on your to-do list regularly, then you'll be growing your capacity to give and receive love and your feeling of being connected to all people. And I'm certainly not claiming that it's easy. On a personal level, I have to admit that 2 years ago I heard someone say spiritual practice and I had to ask them what they were talking about. So that's for anyone here who didn't know what that meant before, that's fine. I'm with you on that. I try to meditate daily, but I have to confess that my gratitude diary has lapsed in the last few months. And other practices do elude me at the moment. A person who is committed to focusing on the five qualities might keep a journal for every day, reflecting on how they've done each day with regard to the different areas that they're working on. But I'm afraid I haven't got that far yet. I mention my own experience in the hope that you can hear my words as sowing seeds, opportunities, possibilities, encouragement, possibly inspiration, but certainly not nagging. The Dalai Lama said, "I believe that the purpose of life is to be happy. From the moment of birth Every human being wants happiness and does not want suffering. Neither social conditioning, nor education, nor ideology affect this. From the very core of our being, we simply desire contentment. I don't know whether the universe, with its countless galaxies, stars, and planets, has a deeper meaning or not. But at the very least, it is clear that we humans who live on the Earth face the task of making a happy life for ourselves. Therefore, it's important to discover what will bring about the greatest degree of happiness. And there is an ever-growing body of evidence from psychological research that cultivation and practice of the qualities of mindfulness, generosity, compassion, connection, and gratitude does lead to high levels of happiness. From my Protestant Christian upbringing, the purpose of life being solely to achieve happiness feels rather selfish. And I suppose I might ascribe to the humanist view that the purpose of life is to lead an ethical life of personal fulfillment that aspires to the greater good of humanity. But by being connected with other people, mindful of what is going on within and around us, and practicing generosity and compassion, we are also doing good in the world. The Dalai Lama concludes his article on compassion with, "I believe that at every level of society, familial, tribal, national, and international, the key to a happier and more successful world is the growth of compassion. We do not need to become religious, nor do we need to believe in an ideology. All that is necessary is for each of us to develop our good human qualities. I try to treat whoever I meet as an old friend. This gives me a genuine feeling of happiness." Well worth putting 5 extra things on your Christmas to-do list, don't you think?